Good afternoon, and thanks for tuning in to Sun Sounds of Arizona. This is your volunteer host here with you every Saturday to bring you the news and top stories from the Military Times, your independent news source about your military. Today is Saturday, July 4th, and with that in mind, I hope you're having a great, safe Independence Day weekend. As we look back at the events and top stories of the week, beginning with this headline, U.S. withdrew forces from Nigeria after operation against ISIS, AFRICOM chief says. The United States has withdrawn most of the forces it deployed for a recent operation against Islamic State militants in Nigeria and is now providing intelligence support at Abuja's request, the head of U.S. Africa Command said. In May, U.S. and Nigerian forces conducted military operations in northeastern Nigeria that killed Abu Bilal al-Minuki, the second in command of ISIS, globally. That followed a U.S. strike on Christmas Day against the militants ordered by President Donald Trump, who said they had been targeting Christians in the African country. Addressing a conference of African defense chiefs in Angola on Thursday, AFRICOM Commander General Dagvin Anderson described May's joint U.S.-Nigerian as a model for future security cooperation in Africa. We have withdrawn much of our forces that were just there for that operation, but are continuing the partnership that Nigeria has asked for to help continue with the intelligence sharing, Anderson told journalists during a U.S. State Department-hosted briefing after the conference. Anderson said the operation in Nigeria's Lake Chad Basin region demonstrated Washington's approach of providing specialized capabilities while allowing African partners to lead security operations. He said cooperation with Nigeria had helped significantly degrade Islamic State's leadership, adding that the impact had extended beyond West Africa because of the militant group's international network. The operation disrupted not only local commanders, but also broader Islamic State communications and operations, he added. Nigeria has been very active since that operation in May, Anderson said. They continue to prosecute targets themselves. He added that Nigerian military pressure, combined with efforts to publicize the operation, had encouraged additional defections and surrenders among ISIS fighters in northeastern Nigeria. The three-day conference in Angola's capital, Luanda, was attended by military leaders from 35 African countries, alongside representatives from the U.S. and Brazil. Up next, defense startups raid auto and fracking sectors for parts to speed weapons output. Defense tech startups are repurposing automotive chips and pipes used in fracking while copying production methods from drug makers in an effort to deliver weapons to the Pentagon faster and at lower cost. Soaring demand for rocket motors used to power missiles and other weapons has spurred new thinking in supply chains. Seeking big returns, Silicon Valley-style startups are now taking on defense companies that have long dominated the industry, pulled into the competition by a need for production speed, high volume, and lower costs, according to 10 industry executives, experts, and U.S. officials interviewed by Reuters. The U.S. has plowed through over 50,000 rockets, missiles, and other projectiles propelled by rocket motors since the Russian invasion of Ukraine in 2022 through the U.S. attack on Iran, Pentagon data shows. Washington is setting aside $53 billion and simplifying procurement rules to increase critical missile and rocket production. CEOs from Lockheed, Boeing, and Raytheon, parent RTX, among the largest military contractors, have warned that solid rocket motor shortages were hurting missile production. Now, defense entrepreneurs must prove they can deliver. Pleasing the Pentagon brings huge benefits, including contracts with a government agency that has an annual budget of more than $1 trillion and a seal of approval other governments want to see before buying from new contractors. But challenges are ahead. All the new entrants will need to produce enough of the new weapons to meet growing demand. Many new entrants are making rocket motors for existing missiles, some are making the entire missile, but none of the companies have scaled up production to replace legacy contractors. Legacy solid rocket motor makers Northrop Grumman and L3Harris said they have been pushing their own research and development to pull these new technologies like 3D printing and new mixing technologies. From steering cars to steering missiles. California-based Castelion, which makes solid rocket motors and hypersonic weapons, turned to the auto industry for sophisticated electronic components used in advanced driver assistance systems and electric vehicles to help steer its missiles to targets. These auto industry processors, known as field programmable gate arrays, can be bought at a tenth of the cost and obtained 6 times faster than comparable versions used in the aerospace industry, Chief Operating Officer Sean Pitt said. The oil and gas industry has been another important supply chain resource for Castelion. Rather than sourcing high-pressure metal tubes from aerospace vendors with long lead times, the company is using high-temperature, stress-rated, precision-machined tubes used to help crack open rocks in the fracking process. These tubes are built to handle heat and pressure levels comparable to what is required for a rocket motor, but are sold by far more vendors at lower prices than the aerospace industry equivalent, Pitt said. Castelion, recently valued at nearly $3 billion, has won big Pentagon contracts to make over 500 hypersonic weapons. Mixing rocket motor propellant is another area of innovation for startup Anduril, the company among the more successful recent defense industry entrants, with several $1 billion of contracts under its belt, is using a pharmaceutical industry technique to mix chemicals used in rocket motors. Anduril, valued at $61 billion, has purchased Colorado-based Flactex bladeless mixers capable of processing multi-hundred kilogram propellant batches in minutes rather than hours. Anduril says the machine delivers more than a tenfold increase in production throughput compared to its previous mixing systems. The bladeless mixers produce more than 24 times the output of conventional industrial mixers, which are more like a giant kitchen mixer with paddles that require time for cleaning. The same bladeless centrifugal technology is used to produce precision compounds, including liposome-based cancer treatments, applications where batch consistency and contamination control are as unforgiving as in weapons production. Still, challenges lie ahead for new entrants trying to break into the solid rocket motor business. Tom Caracco, director of the Missile Defense Project at the think tank Center for Strategic and International Studies, said they include, quote, the painstaking multi-step manufacturing process of casting, curing, baking, X-raying, and sanding that solid fuel rocket motors require, followed by rigorous inspection. Curing ovens and X-ray equipment remain a bottleneck for the industry, Caracco added. 3D printing to cut production times. Innovations have already had a dramatic impact on arms production. A 2024 case study from traditional rocket maker Northrop Grumman estimated that replacing conventionally machined metal tooling with 3D printed polymer tools reduces the amount of time it takes to create a production line from roughly a year to about 6 weeks, enabling a new rocket motor to be developed from scratch much more quickly. X-Bow Systems is a New Mexico-based company that specializes in low-cost solid rocket motor, or SRM, production through a process that utilizes 3D printing of propellants and motors. The technology has the potential to reduce the time and cost of CRM production drastically. X-Bow has also said it can shorten the creation of a new production line, which makes 3D printed motors, from a 3 to 6 year timeline to about 12 months. X-Bow already has $191 million Pentagon contract for hundreds of solid rocket motors. Texas-based Firehawk Aerospace, founded in 2020, also uses 3D printing to manufacture SRMs at a fraction of the cost of traditional production methods. Firehawk says its manufacturing process cuts rocket fuel production time from up to 60 days to just 7 hours, at one-tenth the traditional cost. It enables custom-designed missiles to be test-ready in a matter of months. Firehawk is backed by funding from venture capital firm 1789 Capital, a fund where President Donald Trump's son is a partner. Government purchasing patterns will always be a limiting factor for startups. The Pentagon has traditionally bought rocket quantities annually, resulting in unpredictable demand shifts from year to year. How can we get good multi-year agreements that don't roll off when administration changes? Said Lucas Zinger, CEO of Divergent Technologies, which makes parts for missiles. He added, "That's what businesses need to perform at low cost." Up next in the top stories from the week, General Christopher Donahue relinquishes command of U.S. Army Europe and Africa. U.S. Army General Christopher Donahue relinquished command of U.S. Army Europe and Africa in Wiesbaden, Germany, Thursday after an unexpectedly brief 18 months in the role. The Army has not given a reason for the leadership change. Major General Christopher Norrie will serve as acting commander until Donahue's successor is nominated by the Senate and confirmed by the President, according to the Army. He said, "I love this team. It's been the honor of a lifetime to be a part of it. I'm proud of what we built, and I have absolute confidence in what you will build next. So when people ask me, 'Hey, CD, what was it like to be part of United States Army Europe and Africa?' I only have to tell them how proud and unbelievably grateful I am to have been a part of the United States Army's premier warfighting headquarters." The West Point graduate previously led the 18th Airborne Corps in the 82nd Airborne Division. In 2021, he oversaw the U.S.'s withdrawal from Afghanistan. A night vision photo of the general stepping onto the final C-17 out of Kabul became an emblematic image of the decades-long war. Donahue's departure comes amid sweeping leadership changes at the Pentagon. Since assuming office, Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth has removed or replaced at least a dozen senior leaders. All right, in other news, proposed honor and remember flag resembles communist imagery, Vietnam veterans argue. Vietnam War veterans are pushing back against the use of an honor and remember flag because of its resemblance to the Bolshevik communist flag and the flag flown by the Democratic Republic of Vietnam. Vietnam Veterans of America, a national veteran service organization, argued Thursday that the flag, the honor and remember flag, cannot serve as a positive symbol for veterans who fought against communism. The flag shows a gold star on a red background, imagery reminiscent of multiple communist movements, VVA said in a public statement. For Vietnam veterans especially, the striking resemblance to the flag flown by the Democratic Republic of Vietnam during the Vietnam War and seen in all the images of North Vietnamese tanks invading Saigon on April 30, 1975, is impossible to ignore, the group wrote. A congressional effort is underway to designate the Honor and Remember flag as a national symbol of remembrance for service members and veterans who died as a result of their military service. The VVA said the proposal was recently attached to the fiscal 2027 National Defense Authorization Act, an annual must-pass defense policy and budget bill. The proposal was originally introduced by Representatives Don Davis, a Democrat of North Carolina, Jen Kiggins, a Republican of Virginia, and Glenn Thompson, a Republican of Pennsylvania. The Bipartisan Problem Solvers Caucus endorsed the measure in February. The amendment mandates that the flag be displayed at federal sites, including the U.S. Capitol, White House, and national cemeteries on Memorial Day, Veterans Day, Independence Day, and other holidays. Representative Kiggins said in a February statement, "The brave men and women who laid down their lives in service to our nation deserve our deepest gratitude and lasting remembrance. While we can never fully repay the debt we owe them, we must always ensure their legacy is honored." Now, the flag was created by George Lutz after the death of his son, Army Corporal George Tony Lutz, who was killed by an enemy sniper in Fallujah, Iraq, in 2005. Since its creation, 29 states have adopted the Honor and Remember flag as an official symbol. Now, the VVA National President, Tom Burke, argued the idea was not adequately discussed before being proposed for a national designation, The American flag already represents the sacrifices of Americans who have died in defense of the nation, he contended. Rather than creating confusion and strife regarding official national symbols by introducing new federally recognized commemorative flags, the VVA encourages Congress to direct its efforts towards policies that directly benefit Gold Star families, survivors, wounded veterans, and those currently serving, Burke said. All right, up next, another top story from the week. Transgender troops granted class action lawsuit against government. A federal court issued a ruling Tuesday that paves the way for all transgender service members to continue serving in the military, despite a Trump administration policy that ordered their removal. The U.S. District Court for the District of Columbia granted a motion to certify Talbot v. USA as a class action lawsuit several weeks after the U.S. Court of Appeals for the D.C. Circuit said in a June 1st ruling that the Pentagon's transgender military ban was unlawful. The June ruling only allowed the plaintiffs in that case to continue serving, meaning all other transgender service members are currently still banned from the military. But if the class action lawsuit goes into effect in 2 weeks along with the June ruling, the protections won in Talbot v. USA would extend to all transgender service members currently serving. Shannon Minter, the legal director for the National Center for LGBTQ Rights, said, "The protection afforded to our plaintiffs should be available to all transgender service members and their families. We know that this ban is discriminatory, rooted in animus, and irrationally excludes highly decorated service members who have deployed around the world and given everything to our country." President Donald Trump signed an executive order on January 27, 2025, stating that service members with a history of, quote, gender dysphoria, have medical, surgical, and mental health constraints incompatible with the high mental and physical standards necessary for military service. Transgender troops previously needed a gender dysphoria diagnosis in order to receive gender-affirming care while in the military, and as a result, many transgender service members have the term in their medical record. Approximately 4,240 transgender individuals are serving in the military, have a gender dysphoria diagnosis, both on active duty and in the reserves, according to an Associated Press report. The Defense Department rolled out a sweeping voluntary separation policy last February that attempted to incentivize transgender military service members to separate from the military by offering more money than they would otherwise receive for involuntary separation. Service members who Military Times spoke to at the time said the move was anything but voluntarily, as they wanted to continue to serve and saw the policy as a way to kick them out. Transgender service members have either been voluntarily or involuntarily separated, or are currently in the process of being separated while on paid administrative leave. The National Center for LGBTQ Rights and GLAAD Law filed a lawsuit against Trump January 28, 2025, alleging that the ban was unconstitutional because the policy was based on animus. The lawsuit eventually shifted so that the plaintiffs were suing the U.S. government. The United States District Court for the District of Columbia issued a nationwide preliminary injunction on March 18, 2025, blocking the discharge of transgender service members, which the newly enacted Defense Department policy called for. The U.S. government appealed to the U.S. Court of Appeals for the D.C. Circuit, which ultimately ruled in the plaintiff's favor over a year later on June 1, 2026. The government has 45 days after the June 1 ruling to file a petition for rehearing. The U.S. Court of Appeals for the D.C. Circuit can either accept or deny that request. The government can also ask the entire U.S. Court of Appeals for the D.C. Circuit to rehear the case, which would comprise 11 active judges, as opposed to a three-judge panel like the one that decided the June 1 ruling. If the government went that route, the ruling of that rehearing would go into effect 7 days after the decision. The Trump administration could also ask the U.S. Supreme Court to issue an emergency stay to stop the preliminary injunction and class action lawsuit from going into effect. The government has not filed as of Wednesday. All right, another legal top story from this week. Air Force major arrested on Capitol steps during protest calling for Trump impeachment. A U.S. Air Force major was arrested Wednesday for protesting alone on House steps as he called for the immediate impeachment and removal of President Donald Trump. Major Jason Watson was arrested by Capitol Police officers at approximately 1:15 p.m. local time for demonstrating on the House steps without a sitting member of Congress, Capitol Police told Military Times. Watson, an active duty service member with a military career dating over 20 years, walked halfway up the steps of the House to its chained railing to hold a sign that read, "Impeach, convict, remove." Watson was first escorted to the bottom of the steps by Representative Al Green, a Democrat of Texas, who then left the area, causing the officers to arrest Watson under 22-1307, crowding, obstructing, and incommoding. When the member of Congress left the area, our officers gave the man lawful orders to stop the illegal demonstration or he would be arrested, the spokesperson said. The man refused our lawful orders. The spokesperson highlighted that there are other areas on the Capitol where demonstrating is allowed. Watson stoically stood, wearing his uniform on the steps for roughly 1 minute before officers first approached him. Another minute later, he was again approached by an officer who spoke to him briefly and was nodded at by Watson, as shown in video footage posted by Removal Coalition founder Jessica Denson, who organized the demonstration. Over a minute later, Watson was approached for a third time, but this time he quietly and peacefully placed his sign down and was arrested by Capitol Police before being escorted off the steps by multiple officers as protesters' chants of, "Who do you serve? Who do you protect?" rang clear. Prior to the protest, Watson held a press conference alongside Green, Denson, constitutional lawyer Bruce Fein, Defenders of Our Republic, and About Face veterans, calling on Trump's and Vice President J.D. Vance's impeachment and removal from office. Denson, who introduced Watson for his speech, said that Watson is currently on leave from his commission post as a logistics readiness officer in Poland. She said that he approached the Removal Coalition in February and asked them to create this event for him so that it would not be in vain. The question of whether or not his sacrifice, his risk of prosecution, his potential forfeiture of the benefits of an entire over 20-year career in the military is worth it is whether you follow through with the pressure that is needed on Congress to impeach, convict, and remove, Denson said, calling on the audience and fellow protesters. Active duty service members are strictly prohibited from engaging in partisan political activities, especially while in uniform, per the Uniform Code of Military Justice. Those who do can face criminal or administrative punishment, such as imprisonment, loss of pay, dishonorable discharge, and more. Service members must comply with all laws, regulations, and policies governing conduct and the wear of the uniform, an Air Force spokesperson told Military Times. As commanders verify inappropriate actions, they are also responsible for taking the necessary administrative and disciplinary actions to hold service members accountable. The Air Force confirmed that Watson's title is staff officer with the current duty station Bydgoszcz, Poland. He entered active duty in late May 2009. In his speech before taking to the steps, Watson said he entered basic cadet training in the U.S. Air Force Academy in late June of 2005 when he first spoke the oath of office, calling it foundational to the system of government and pertinent to ensure all officials owe allegiance to the Constitution instead of to a political party. He said that the greatest threat to the country's democratic republic was not a foreign one, but domestic. We, the people, have played a part in getting the country into the mess we are all in, he said. For the past 18 months, we the people have allowed the highest levels of the executive branch of the federal government to violate our Constitution and their oaths to it with impunity, Watson stated. When the President of the United States orders military action against foreign countries, absent an emergency scenario where American interests are under imminent dire threat, as was done with Venezuela, Cuba, and Iran, that's an unconstitutional usurpation of Congress's authority and a violation of the War Powers Clause, he continued. Watson said that the violations caused the death of 13 service members and injuries of hundreds more, and for that, Trump and Vance should be impeached, convicted, and removed from office. The major also pointed to other violations, such as Elon Musk being allowed to shut down large portions of the federal government and granted access to government databases, as well as Trump directing the Department of Homeland Security to deny due process before illegally detaining people and sending them to CECOT, a foreign prison in El Salvador notorious for human rights abuses. In Watson's view, Trump sponsors violence on the American people engaged in their right to peacefully assemble and protest, as protected by the First Amendment, as a reason for the pair's removal. Watson said there are innumerable more impeachable offenses that he could list, including denying congressional oversight of immigrant detention centers, suing media, law firms, and educational institutions, weaponizing the Department of Justice, and attempting to reverse birthright citizenship. Although Green did not speak at the conference, he was addressed by Watson, who referred to himself as not a Democrat. A spokesperson for Green denied to comment on if the representative was aware that Watson would be arrested for not being escorted atop the House steps. Green was the only member of Congress who voted to impeach Trump during his second term. The resolution was dismissed in the House voting 237-140 to table the measure. I am calling on average Americans everywhere to peacefully exercise your First Amendment rights en masse every day until this administration is removed and our democratic republic is restored, Watson stated. If just a nobody like me can take a stand for our Constitution and our democratic republic, then you can too. I hope you will join me in the defense of our republic, he concluded. Capitol Police said he's not being held. A spot fund was created to gather donations for Watson's defense that has garnered nearly $70,000 as of Thursday afternoon. The White House did not immediately respond to a request for comment. Watson is the first ever active duty commissioned officer in the military to publicly protest for the impeachment, conviction, and removal of Trump and Vance. And with that, that is all the time we have, folks. Thank you once again for tuning in to Sun Sounds of Arizona. Have a great weekend. This is your host, signing out.